everybody, and welcome to episode 75 of the Weekly Wind Down. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacy, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacy, the political princess.
And I'm Allie Valley.
And we're so lucky to have Allie Valley with us today, award-winning author. She has done my actual personal favorite besides the honor series, which is the Ken Casey series. And so we are going to talk to her for about 20 minutes, and then she has agreed to weigh in on all of our political shenanigans for the week. So I am drinking tonight Silk and Spice, and it's literally all it says is product of Portugal. So there's like no, but it says the metaphor of silk and spice apples to the flavors of this red blend, smooth and juicy with a slight vanilla note. It does not have a vanilla note. It possesses flavors that can only be found in the indigenous grapes of Portugal. And I have to say, it's really good. It's like really, really good. I'm only three sips in. I'm sure it's going to be fan-fucking-tastic by the end of this, but right now it's real good.
That's funny. I'm drinking, it's called Sertario, and all it says is product of Portugal. It's like, we planned this. It's a theme. It's a red wine, and it's really good. It's a little bit heavy, but I think I'm going to like it after this glass, definitely.
We always do.
Yeah,
that is true.
I like it.
What rosé are you drinking tonight, Stacy?
I didn't grab the rosé. I am drinking the Hello Kitty.
Oh, Jesus.
Pinot Grigio.
Hello Kitty makes a Grigio. Okay.
Yeah, I grabbed a couple other bottles, and I was getting ready to leave Safeway, and I was like, oh my God, there's Hello Kitty wine at Safeway. So I got
it
that.
It must be good.
You know, they do have several Hello Kitty wines, first of all, ma'am. Don't be so judgy. They have a whole collection, in fact.
Do I strike you as a person who has ever had a Hello Kitty anything?
No, but I was like, if somebody's going to review this wine, it's probably going to be
me. It's only going to be you.
So far, Pinot Grigio is not my favorite. But I do appreciate that it's not super sweet. So we'll see how it goes in a little
while. Which is shocking since it's Hello Kitty.
Right. I know. And I just got it. So I'm not gonna lie. It is in a glass full of ice right now.
Okay.
It was in temp, and I know.
Is there glitter in it?
Y'all are so highbrow to me. I'm drinking a Bud Light.
That's okay.
I like it.
It's only 40 it's 40 degrees in Louisiana. Can you believe it?
No.
I mean, last week it was 95. Today it's 40.
That's great, because there's no such thing as fall anymore. Just go straight from summer to winter.
I was home on a snow day today. We got 9 inches.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. Actually, last year we went to Breckenridge for a winter vacation, because we don't have winter here. It lasts about 5 seconds. And then so we went to Breckenridge, and there was no snow. And then we came home, and it snowed 4 times. Can you kidding me? I saved all that money and stayed home. Skied in my backyard.
Yeah, snow days now have like a different meaning that I stay home with a baby now. Like, yeah.
Not really a day off
anymore.
It
was not relaxing at all. I was like, oh my God. I used to be like, snow day, what? I'm going to watch so many shows and like, I'm going to do whatever. No.
What'd you do today?
I fed the little rascal. Like, he's right now, he's in this weird eating thing. So he ate like every 2 hours. So he was just being a damn nightmare. He's lovely.
He's
I love him.
Plan.
He's perfect. I hope I can go back to work tomorrow. Okay. So, Allie, you have the sequel to one of your books coming out next month. This one is called Answering the Call. It is the sequel to Calling the Dead. And why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I wrote Calling the Dead. I think it's been 7 years since that book came out. And a lot of people said, well, why didn't you write the sequel? Because it was so good. And I said, well, because everybody thought, I think it's one of my favorite Amazon reviews I've ever gotten. This lady wrote, and she said she could have given me 5 stars instead of the 4. But it was just so violent. And I said, well, let me go back and look at the description, because it was like, it's a serial killer working in New Orleans after Katrina. Mm-hmm. Wants to make friends? but a serial killer working in the city. So a lot of people didn't read it because they thought it was too violent, which is kind of shocking because everybody loves Kane, and the more violent she gets, the better she is.
She has redeeming qualities, though.
Exactly. So I think it was like a good Hello Kitty wine. It took a little time to kind of age itself. And so finally I got more and more calls to do it. So it is, as far as the book is concerned, it's about 6 months after the first book ended. So we're still in kind of post-Katrina world, and the city's a little torn apart. And then so, Sette Savoy has just closed her biggest case. This guy who's doing all these kind of Santeria killings around town. And then so now she's still with Keegan, who's cooking up a storm at the restaurant. And then so she thinks it's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of case. And then she finds out that the first case right out of the park is exactly like the murders that she had solved before. So it goes downhill from there.
Really? So,
yeah. My betas think I need like some sort of help. So the first one was bad.
I read Calling the Dead, and I have to say it's one of the only books in our genre where it stressed me out at nighttime to read it because it was really intense. But
that gets you invested in it.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I've just struggled with this too. I had a reviewer, my latest book that came out, and it's post-apocalyptic, like the world's coming to an end. And they're like, I felt like it was kind of far-fetched. And I'm like, it was literally in the description. Why did you read it?
Exactly.
It says in there, 4 people are cryogenically frozen. And the person goes, I just don't understand why they were frozen. I'm like, why do you do this? It's real frustrating.
Like, why would you pick up a book that you don't, that's like, oh, I read Cujo, but I don't like dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to the Future, like, I don't really see that happening.
Well,
not the point.
Like, I just don't understand how the DeLorean does it. You know, you're like, come on, man. Okay.
Although, I don't know, because I felt like there were a lot of things in that book that honestly could have happened.
Well,
the fact that she was so stuck on the cryogenic freezing.
Right, like that was the least interesting part of it. It was literally like 4 sentences.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It wasn't. It's not like we dwelled on it. Yeah. It was.
But she loved the Hunger Game.
No, it was
super realistic.
No, I'll call my friends every once in a while, especially the first scene of this book is actually pretty. And it was like, is it too much? Like,
gauge
too much?
Where I'm at.
Like, man, you know, you. Thank God you do what you do for a living, because we really worry about you. You really need help. You really need help.
So. Did you watch that show, Dexter?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you watch that show, Dexter?
That's one of my favorite shows on television.
Me too.
Well, the first scene is very Dexter-like.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So it happens. You know, it's like, it comes, like, it kind of ties into the plot way into the book, but it's kind of the first part is very important. So
I'm looking forward
to it. And it's like, because everybody, when I actually, you know, Rad calls you and tells you, write a mystery. It's like, okay. Sure. So I started writing, and I sent it to my betas, and I have like chapter 1, 2, and 3, sometimes 4. But those chapters are actually about 100, 150 pages long. So I don't waste time like breaking up into chapters, I break into sections. And then so they were like on page 20. They're like, we know who did it. Well, damn. I'm stuck there writing mysteries. And I was like, well, okay. And then when they got to the end, they were like, oh, my God, you know, Calling the Dead. Because everybody thought it was, you know, one character. And then when it turns out to be another character, they were like, I never saw it coming.
I didn't see
it
coming.
This one,
I love that.
So hopefully this one will kind of work out. It's like they kind of started guessing, and then you know the characters they were like, oh, and then when we got to the end they were like, no way. I mean, even Tony from Bostrom's, because the book came out to all the people at BSB already, They're like, never saw it coming. And I thought, well, then okay.
That's always a good
maybe
answer.
I don't suck.
Yeah. Right, right. Because when you kind of figure that stuff out and then you're like, I think it's this person and it gets confirmed, I'm always a little like, oh, womp, womp. Like, I want to be surprised by it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, I mean, I figured it out. But I like to have that moment of like, how did that happen?
I know. Yeah. No, it's Carson Tate helped me with this one, and so did VK Powell. And they were like, what the fuck? Yeah, I was like, that's a good reaction. That's what I was going
yeah.
for.
That's what you, yeah, that's what you want.
Well, especially because they're a retired cop and a lawyer, so
exactly.
You want to surprise
them. I needed both.
Them.
I needed both.
Right.
Carson usually the one that tells me to stop talking. Stop talking right now. You're attorney. Stop talking.
Our first question for you is from Aubrey, and she wants to know if there is a certain type of music you listen to while you write.
I like kind of oldies, which is now music from when I went to high school. It's now an oldies station, which is like, what the shit?
I say that a lot.
Yeah, you know, like the blend on Sirius Radio. So I listen to that. I watch TV a lot. I like actually to sit at the mall and like people watch.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then I'll listen, you know, I'll put my headphones in so that I don't necessarily want to eavesdrop on your conversation, but I like to, because there's no place like New Orleans. You know, you sit someplace out in public, and it's like, so a lot of those people have actually made it into the books.
Cool. I meet people sometimes know. And I'm like, you're going in my next book because you are
exactly.
a hot fucking mess.
No kidding.
Okay, this one is from Jessica, and she wants to know if you were a troublemaker as a child.
I was. You know, my mom died about 9 years ago, and my dad died a couple years ago. So my brother and I are going through the house, and my mother kept all our report cards. So, you know, so my mother was like, and she put a big emphasis on education. So I got like all straight A's, and I got in trouble every single time because it was, for some reason, when I was in school, they had conduct grades, which were, you know, A to F, but then for some reason they added numbers. So then you would go down to the little thing. So mine were always like D, 2, 7, 11. And it would be like, talks too much.
I got that a lot too.
Inclined to mischief.
Damn.
So,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a lot of social butterfly. I think it's a weird 90s way of saying that I couldn't shut up.
So, yeah.
Hurt my tender millennial feeling.
Okay, last one yeah. from our listeners. This one's from Lindsay, and she wants to know, who was your childhood literary superhero?
Ooh,
good question.
Probably, yeah, no, that is a good question. That is a good question. I guess it kind of escapes my mind on who wrote Nancy Drew, but I read all the Nancy Drew books, all the, you know, all those kind of little mystery books. And then I read a lot as a kid, so I don't think I had just one.
Mm-hmm.
But those are, you know, like Little Women. So I think I was kind of well-rounded. So, and then it turned out I never wrote anything, you know, because you listen to these other people and it's like, oh, when I was 3, you know, I penned my first book. And it's like, really, no. So it just so happened, this was years ago, I think the Harry Potter books were on book 3. And my partner gave them to me for Christmas. And I was like, what the shit is this? A children's book. And then we were going to her sister's for Christmas. And then I was like, can I go sit in the car and read? Because I really got into these Harry Potter books. And then I started reading about, you know, how she wrote them. She was like at a restaurant. She wrote them on napkins. And I thought, I wonder if I can write anything. So I sat down one day and just decided, let me give it a shot. So I wrote some stuff online, and which I really appreciate. People still call me about them. And then I decided to write Carly Sound, which turned out to be Carly Sound. And then that's how it all began back in 1999. Actually.
Carly Sound's a tearjerker. I think I've read every one of your books, I think.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
that is the only one I've never read in public.
Really?
Because no, it makes me really cry. So
it's a,
and it's just you lose a lot of damn tear jerker. You know what?
I love books like that.
It's heartbreaking. You would think Nicholas Sparks wrote it. Like it's it's real intense.
But you know what? Books like that are such good catharsis too. Mm-hmm. You know, because even if I feel like I have some pent up emotion, but I'm not necessarily upset about anything, I will watch a sad movie or read a sad book or listen to a sad song just to get that like emotion out, even though I'm not
so Adele.
Like,
you listen to Adele nonstop.
Yeah, and then I look at myself in the mirror and cry.
Yeah. And then you drink Hello Kitty wine. You wash your tears down with Hello Kitty wine.
Yeah, it cuts down the sweetness, the saltiness of my tears, cuts down the sugar in the Hello Kitty Pinot Grigio. Oh, that's bad.
All right. Stacey's squared. What are your questions?
So along those same lines, what did you want to be when you grew up? Did it ever occur to you that you would write at all?
No, I wrote memos and like letters, and I was pretty good at that. But no, I just wrote and I put it out there, and I thought, okay. And then so I actually got a lot of response, and then so I remember the one that I think kind of put me on, not on the map, but got me noticed, and for all the wrong reasons. You remember the Academy of Bards?
No,
they have a Valentine's Day challenge. They have a Halloween challenge, April Fool's Day challenge. So they asked me to do and I said, well, okay, I'll do the Valentine's Day challenge. So I wrote a book, or a story, I should say, and it had an unhappy ending. And then, but I wrote another one because I said, I shortened my mom's maiden name. So my mom's whole maiden name was Valdivia. And I said, well, I'm going to write the first part is Allie Valley. And then I'll write the second part is A. Valdivia. And then so obviously the second part had a happy ending. So Valentine's happened to fall on a Saturday that year. And so I wake up and I turn the computer on and I have like 2,500 responses. And I thought,
oh my gosh.
Wow, this is like something. And I said, so like the Amazon review, this lady wrote me and she said, you're the woman who killed Valentine's Day. And
it was like, oh my God.
God damn, wow. I didn't know I had that kind of power.
So what do you say to that? Thank you? Like, you're welcome?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Maybe where Ken Casey came from.
It's possible.
So I end up, I said, well, you know, did they not go down the list and see the, you know, the happy ending?
Yeah.
And then so that's when I realized they didn't post it. And I was like,
because you did two names.
I had to like sit there and respond to 2,500 people. It's like, okay, there's the second part.
Please don't hate me.
Like I guess that was the first time that I thought you could write something and it really resonates with people and they care about the characters. And it's like, you know, now I go to like the GCLS and I go to P-Town and it's really interesting because people will come up and it's like, you know, on page 32, and it's like, okay, I don't remember who the characters are in the book. So it's like, what's on page
32? That was
32?
4 books ago. I don't
know. Yeah, no, I really don't. So it's like, but Kane is just somebody, because I actually wrote Kane because for myself, because there was nothing like it in the genre, like you said. And it was just, and then so that's when my partner said, she's like, no one is going to read this book because it's so violent. And she and I'm like, well, I wrote it for me because I like, you know, The Godfather is my favorite movie. And then so it came out.
For those that don't
know,
Kane Casey series is The Godfather, but a woman as the mob boss. And she's just like soulmate in love with her partner. Like it's so good. I can't even tell you guys. Every time a new one comes out, I'm like, oh thank God. It's such a good series. I think even straight people would like it. So it's fantastic.
No, I mean it's like I just never really thought that Kane would have had that kind of, you know, response that I just actually signed a contract for book 7.
The prologue? Is that one out yet?
So no, that one's out already, and then it's like, I'm going to do, because I said I was going to end it at 7, you know, that was it, and then I thought, and then in this last book, though, The Devil's Due, before The Heart of the Devil came out, I said, I introduced the Russian mob, and it's like, well, you know, unless I can write a 900-page book, I think there's going to have to be a book eight.
I don't think anyone will be disappointed to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully. But answering the call, Sep is a character from the Kane Casey series, too.
Yeah, and actually, you might get a little taste.
I love it. I love it.
Of Kane might be in this new book. You never know.
Well, you can't be in New Orleans without encountering Kane Casey. You just can't.
Exactly. Exactly. So, no, I get the weirdest ideas for, because in one book, you know, it's I'm probably on some FBI watch list. Because I'm the only person who gets, because there was this one character that showed up in, what was it, book three, I think, of the series, and it's this guy named Juan, and he's gone after Kane's partner, and she just hates him, and he's kidnapped her and all this stuff. And then so I didn't kill him in like book five. And people were like, what? Kill him. Like, you know, this is how you should do it. I'm like the only person that gets emails on how to kill people. I try to make it interesting, you know, you don't just shoot them. You got to make it a little interesting. Yeah. So,
Stacey?
This one, so, you know, finally he got his justification in the end, and I tried to think of a good way to do it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Do you ever get nervous? Like when you have a new book coming out, do you get nervous to read those Amazon reviews? Is it like,
I do. Well, it's like, gift out it's like, to the world and... yeah, no, I put them out there, and some people can be, I don't mind them if it's like you, there was some reason you didn't like it, you know, and brought back some bad experience or something. Right. But some people are just mean, man. It's like, wow.
Well, because they can hide behind their computer screen and think whatever they want.
Well, I think that's what's wrong with the world today is, you know, you get to hide behind a computer screen. So it's like, I don't think they take into, you know, because I went to, I forgot what seminar it was. Because now you have these ebooks. They put them out there. They're on the internet. People steal them. And then it's like, and so I forgot who it was. And they said, well, it's a sign of flattery. It's like, well, don't flatter me so much. Just pay for it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's hours and hours of my time to do
right,
this.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's like, I get nervous sometimes because it's like you wonder, will people get me?
Yeah. Because
it's like, you know, it just... I do have a quirky sense, because Kane is a killer. She's very psychotic. That's why you really shouldn't like her. People hate the FBI, but they like Kane. And then it's, you know, so you wonder, eventually will the public turn against her? But thank God it has not happened yet.
How could you turn it? She has so many redeeming qualities. Like you can't, no. It won't happen. I always find the reviews interesting, one, because... sometimes I feel like people read books that they don't like the genre to begin with. So why are you even reading
it? Why'd you read it? Yeah,
and exactly.
Two, they have real intense critiques for people who don't know the difference in the theirs. So all I'm saying is if you're going to write a scathing review about one of our literary works, you should spell check that shit first. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, you look dumb.
Amen. Yeah. Amen, sister.
Okay.
Or really just know that in general, just for life.
Do yourself a favor.
Yeah. Right.
Albert Camus once said that the purpose of a writer is to keep civilization from destroying itself. Do you think that writers have an obligation to the greater good?
I do. I think so. I mean, I've read some books along the way that it's, if more people had read them, and it's, what was that guy's name? Leo Buscaglia. You ever read Leo Buscaglia? And it was, he had an interesting concept, and I got to see him in person. He came to New Orleans and he did a speech, and he said, we're all good at something, you know? So in his analogy was, we can't all get boxed into trying to be good at everything. So he said, if there was a school and the animals were in the school, he said, she said, probably like, you know, the cheetah would run the fastest, the lion would be the strongest. And he said, so, but if the lion tried to, you know, do some other talent that another animal had, like trying to grab fruit like a giraffe off the top branch of the tree, then really the one that would be the valedictorian of the school would be like some, you know, slow-witted squirrel. Because... kind of good at everything. So I think in our case, it's like, the thing that I really enjoy, and like Carly Sound is a good example of this, was that it touched with people who've lost partners to cancer. They read Kane and they see something of themselves in the character. But most of all is that they see themselves in the book. You know, that it's not, they might live somewhere. And I've gotten a lot of these emails where they live somewhere where they have to live a very closeted life and they can't express who they love for fear of losing their job or losing their life, really. So I think that it's our responsibility to put those stories out there. And sometimes they're far-fetched and sometimes they're not, you know, but like a good love story, I've kind of tried to balance the killing a little bit and write a love story once in a while where no one dies. It's like a sappy kind of thing. But I think it's so that people, especially young children who are growing up or young adults, can see themselves and not be ashamed of who they are. You know, that you don't have to hide yourself. And there is something out there for you. It might not be now. You might, like, you know, your life might suck now, but eventually down the road, you'll find your niche and then you'll fly. And that's what I think that's the thing that I've enjoyed the most, besides making really great friendships along the way and meeting a lot of people who've read my books and they email me and they come to the conferences and stuff. But I think it is our responsibility to put those stories out there just so that people have something to cling to sometimes and that, you know, they have something until their life does get better.
Well, and sometimes people just need a break. They need a break. They need to escape somewhere that's not their life. And they need to see things. They need to see couples that can work it out and adversities that can be overcome. And like, it's not the day-to-day slog of whatever it is that they're going through. I agree with you. I think writers do have, same with artists. I think musicians, artists, I think they all have, they owe a debt to society kind of because they are talented in an area that other people aren't to find beauty in things that aren't always beautiful, you know?
Well, and I think now more than ever too, we sort of reach for that escapism just because such a dumpster fire.
Exactly. Yeah. No, like I said, it's just one of those things where, especially some of the emails I've gotten, I've saved them because they just are really, they touch you and it's something that it's hard to let go of.
Yeah.
Like I go to P-Town every time and this woman, every time I go and they hear I'm coming, she'll read the book Carly Sound because her partner died of cancer. Because actually in Carly Sound, the woman does die of cancer and my partner had cancer. And then I read the book to her. It's the only time I've ever read out loud for the book. And she was like, "You killed me?" I said, "Well, no." I said, because, you know, when somebody's going through that and they're going through the chemo and everything,
right.
It's so tiring. Mm-hmm. And you're so like, oh my God, you know, I could lose this person that I love. Yeah. But you can't like sit and like sob in front of them.
Right.
kind of keep them upbeat, you know, try to joke around and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then so I was by myself, I did that. But
yeah.
And then so finally she came through it and she went into remission and everything. And we were at a Billy Joel concert and it finally hit me and she was up dancing and having a great time. And I finally was like, okay, well, she's going to be okay. Yeah. So in the book, like she dies, but then the person that, you know, the second love of the partner's life. Mm-hmm. Is like her, but because she's like nothing like she was before she
had cancer. She's a completely different person.
So she's both of them. Yeah, so that was the story I told.
Carly sounds an amazing.
She wanted
book.
To know if I had killed her.
Yeah.
Like, no, of course not. But then you were reborn.
I don't think I could reread it though, because you do cry like 6 or 7 times throughout that story. It's gut wrenching. It's really painful. Do you guys have any other questions before we move on to the topics? I mean, I could talk to Allie all night, but.
I know. A quick one. What is your absolute favorite book that you would recommend to your readers?
Of mine or just in general?
In general. Harry Potter.
Harry Potter is some of them.
They do really get better as they go on.
No, it's actually my favorite book of all time is like the movie was The Godfather. I think, you know, Puzo did such a great job of a family drama. That's one. And The Witching Hour by Anne Rice is another one.
Same.
I really like that book.
Yes.
Yes. No, she did such, because I love those kind of historic, like I love historic books. I'm too lazy to write one because I don't want to do the research.
Oh, so much work.
I mean, they are, because it's like I went, if you know Jean Redmond and, you know, J.M. Redmond, her partner is, you know, historian, and she does, and she did this lecture in New Orleans at Saints and Sinners, and she's like, oh no, you know, if you put a zipper, four zippers with your women, then it ruins the whole thing. Like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to write one.
Did you
put a zipper where there is none?
Did you read Memnock the Devil by Anne Rice?
Yes. No, I actually, Anne Rice, I was in Florida for the summer, and my partner sent me like a care package. So it was like Interview with a Vampire, and I forgot what the other one was. And I fell in love with Anne Rice because she captures New Orleans so well. Like, I never realized the sky here is violet until I read. And I went outside and I was like,
I'll be
there. Yeah. Really violent at night. So I went, and it's like, Anne Rice looks nothing like her picture on the back cover of her books.
Really?
So I went, yeah. So I was working at LSU at the time, and a friend of mine said, you know, she's going to be signing books at this school she went to uptown. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to leave today. I'm going to get in line and we'll get her to sign my book. And then so I'm in there. I was like the first person there. And then so I was reading the book. I forgot which one it was. And I'm reading it. And this woman walks in and she goes, well, how do you like it? And I said, well, you know, it's really good. It's, you know, but she should really write a sequel to this one and this one. And so I talked to her like 30 minutes before I realized it was Anne Rice.
Oh, my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, no, she's a really nice lady. And sure, her son is really nice, too.
Anne Rice is like in my top three favorite authors. My only complaint about her, and I actually talked about this at Provincetown, is sometimes there's like 100-page of description that I could do without.
Exactly.
Her stories are brilliant, and the characters are phenomenal, and they stay with you for years after. But holy hell, I don't need to hear you describe the Earth when it first was created for 100 pages, because guess what? We all know what green grass looks like. There's only so many ways you can just
words are so flowery, and I
love it too, but.
I know.
You could flip through and be like, all right, where's the story?
Trim some exposition.
Yeah. No, I think I have all her books. They're all signed. And there was one, she did the Beauty series. Have you ever read those?
Mm-mm.
She did them under a pen name, which I can't remember now what they are. But she signed. I said, could you sign them with your real name? So, and do you know what Anne Rice's real name is?
No.
Like the name on her birth certificate?
What?
It's Harold O'Brien.
No shit.
What? Yeah. Harold O'Brien.
I'm going to crush Trivial Pursuit next time I'm in it. Next time I'm in that situation, that question's
mine. Yeah, because I asked her, so it was like, I read that somewhere, and it was like, no way. And I said, why in the world would your parents name you Harold?
Right.
And she said her father, when he saw her, right after she was born, he said, you're going to do great things, so you need a name that will make you stand out. And it was like, and Harold, that's...
Was he drunk? What
Harold, really?
Of all the names, yeah. Jesus.
So I have one that's signed Harold O'Brien.
Wow, you almost forced her into being like a writer to change her name. Right. Jesus.
Yeah. Like, at least to pay for the therapy.
All right, do you guys have any more questions for Allie?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we covered a lot.
I know, we did.
I could ask you questions all night, I think.
Okay, so we're going to move on to something much less pleasant than love stories and Anne Rice and beautiful scenery. Stacy Squared lives in California. So you guys, I mean, schools are being canceled. I know they were canceled in Brentwood for tomorrow because of the air quality. And it's devastating what's happening in California. It's the worst wildfire in the state's history since they've been keeping historical records. So you would expect that the dotard would have someone come up with a more suitable response to said devastation. But that's just asking too fucking much. So he came out and he said, there's no reason the massive, deadly, and costly forest fires in California, except the forest management is so poor. Billions of dollars are given each year with so many lives lost, all because of gross mismanagement of the forest. Remedy now or no more Fed payments. Okay. So much to unpack here.
Yeah. Who manages those forests?
Before
I'm thinking it's the federal government.
You're right. Before we get into how atrocious this is to even address, like, you just don't say that in general. Like, dude, no, you're like, the president. You don't say those kinds of things.
Here's the thing about it, too. Like, there are two, you know, at the same time, two major fires that were happening at that time, the one in Malibu and then the campfire up here. And to make a statement like that when it's still like 20% contained and there's 56 people confirmed dead and there's 300 people missing, it's just like tone deaf doesn't even begin to describe it. Not to mention all of the effects that the rest of us are feeling, like you said. And I know what we're going through here is absolutely nothing compared to these people who've lost family members and homes and pets and all that kind of stuff. But you know, people are, you know, in everywhere in the area are doing what they can to make donations and to volunteer. And, you know, like you said, we're canceling school and we're doing all kinds of stuff because it's, you know, this has been going on for several days now. It's not even 50% contained. It keeps moving. I know I personally have friends and family members that were evacuated and that still live closer to Oroville that had to leave on a more permanent basis kind of because it's not contained and it's within a mile of their house. And it's really, really scary. We've had almost every day here has either been unhealthy to very unhealthy air quality. So to make a statement like that is just so it's just heartless.
Well, and just as a pragmatic answer to it, I don't think one, he knows how government money works.
I don't because think government for money. Yeah. Well, not just government money. I think individually those concepts are lost.
Well, but because I've seen a lot of kickback on Facebook being like, well, California should do, you know, let me explain to people only because, and I'm not trying to be an asshole. Stacey and I have worked for the government our entire adult lives. And if money, so it's all broken up into like green money, blue money, red money. It doesn't actually matter the colors, but you can only spend blue money on blue things. So like, even if a city has $50 million, they can't use that to build parks unless it's marked for parks.
Against the law.
Right. If a state has $100 million for unemployment insurance, they can't use that for forest fire management. Mm-hmm. So to say that they were given money and didn't use it on what it was intended for is so inaccurate, illegal, and not possible. Like, I don't actually think he knows how big California is, or like, I don't think he understands fundamentally how things work. So to all those people posting on Facebook, like, yeah, you should be using your money on the right things. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And I don't mean that as like an asshole thing. Mm-hmm. California can only spend money that's given to them on forest management on forest management. Otherwise they'd be in huge trouble, like huge. Mm-hmm. And it's not something you can easily get by. It has to be approved by different committees and treasurers, and checks have to be signed and it has to be allocated, and there's line items and there's all these things that happen. So it's not just like Gavin Newsom shoving it in his pocket. Like, it does not work like that. So it's just a total complete lack. It's ignorance as to how monies work inside the government. That's just the pragmatic reaction to it of like, no, they're not just throwing money away.
Not to mention, we have all these houses in areas that are meant to have fires. I mean, they really are
science.
That's just how science works. And then on top of that, you have global warming's like it's a thing. They can take pages off the EPA website, but that doesn't wipe it out of
some things are science. True whether you like it or not.
Right.
Yeah, Louisiana loses a football field an hour of land.
Yeah.
Because of coastal erosion.
Is it really that much? Yeah. Wow.
Jesus.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And so when you talk about stuff like that, there's so many things that are just, you can't possibly predict how these things are going to come. Not to mention the fact that once a giant fire like that starts, it creates its own weather system within it.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with outside winds and inside winds and coming out of how long were we in a drought for?
Well, we've been in a drought my whole life, but 11 years of an extreme drought.
So not to mention that. And now we're, you know, here we are almost Thanksgiving and it hasn't rained.
It's going to rain next week.
Thankfully, so that'll be a good thing. But they and if you've never been down south and experienced the Santa Ana winds, like, you just really don't, like, please stop talking. Like, he just needs to I don't know who on his team is responsible for making sure that the stuff he says is, whether or not it's even right, just
no
don't
one.
Be so
clearly
offended.
Fucking no one. No one is responsible.
Right. Good point. Good point.
Just do your obligatory thoughts and prayers and shut the fuck up.
And I know this doesn't have anything to do with him directly, but I'm going to bring it up because it has to do with these fires. I was getting so mad reading people's comments about the fires in Malibu and how somehow, like, we shouldn't feel sorry for celebrities that lose their home. Obviously, it is much easier for them to find resources and get their homes and stuff. But still that feeling of I have lost all of my...
They're still humans.
Meaningful possessions, stuff like that. And one of the comments I read specifically was about Miley Cyrus. And that made me so mad because not only did she never once complain about losing her home, she lost her entire home and every single possession she had in it, which material things can be replaced, but sentimental things can't. She donated $500,000 to the fire relief down there. And I just was like, why are people so like, well, it doesn't matter. She's rich. It doesn't matter. There's some things that are so irreplaceable that it
Who was it? I don't know anybody's name, but she had horses and she was begging people to help her get her horses out. It was Alyssa somebody.
Alyssa Milano.
Yeah. And I mean, people were vicious on the comments on Twitter, like, why the shit should we care about Alyssa? And it's like,
because she's a human being.
Because she's a human being, and she's trying to save her animals. I mean, what is wrong with you? But I mean, you look at pictures like those kids that took their high school prom picture, making the Nazi salute and the OK signal, and it's like, what in the world? I think what's happened is that prejudice and that hate was always there, but people hid it because it just is not socially acceptable. And then now, because of who we have in charge, and it's like people are like, oh, now everybody's racist. Oh, no, they were racist all along.
It's just okay to be racist now.
Exactly. Because it comes from the top. And it's like, I mean, in the South, it's horrible.
Well, we've talked about this on this podcast before, but people have to stop treating empathy like it's a scarce resource. Like you don't only have a certain amount that you could dole out and then that's it. You're tapped out. Like empathy, empathy doesn't always equal endorsement. You don't have to like Alyssa Milano if you're a far right, like whatever, but in a time of need, she is still a human being that's suffering. And Miley Cyrus is still a human being that's suffering. And that's no less important than if it was Scott Baio that was suffering. Like empathy doesn't equal endorsement. And it's a renewable resource. Just because I have empathy for you doesn't mean I can't have empathy for somebody else. Everyone has to stop acting like if they show even the slightest bit of compassion for someone who wears a different team color than them, that they're no, you're not betraying anyone. You're being a fucking human being.
Right.
Stop. Right. Because I'll tell you what, fire, hurricanes, floods, they don't give a shit if you're a Republican or a Democrat. They are going to tear down our country. They're going to tear down our houses, our businesses. They're going to kill animals, black, white people, Asian people. It doesn't fucking matter. So until we can all start getting on the same page and caring about everyone, we're going to keep running into these situations, because it should not be, as soon as something as devastating as this happens in California, it shouldn't be, well, fuck them, they're a blue state. What? Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Exactly.
They're also the fifth largest economy in the world, motherfuckers. And if you like your Medicare or Medicaid in Kentucky, you better give a shit what's burning down in California, because you ain't going to get those food stamps if they're gone.
Right. Exactly. Well, instead of focusing on him and his bullshit, can I say something positive that happened? I don't know if you guys read about this.
No, we're not on that anymore. No, I'm just kidding.
Did you guys, I mean, I'm sure you guys saw, did you guys see this? Alan Pierce, who's a nurse who works in the ICU at a hospital in Paradise, which is the town that burned down. He drove his truck through the fire twice to evacuate people. And reading it, when you read his story and talking about, he just got to a point where he couldn't get through the fire anymore, and he pulled up alongside a fire truck. and got the people out of his truck and just kind of, they gave him some fireproof blankets and he just hunkered down inside his truck or whatever, went back to the hospital, got more people, drove them out. His truck looks like a toasted marshmallow. Yeah. It's a big white, like brand new Toyota Tundra that he put all this work into and you know, spent all this money on and stuff. And he used it to get out. And when he got out, he looked at it. The doors were like welded shut because of the fire and everything. Mm-hmm. And Toyota offered to buy him a new truck, which I think is amazing.
I know. I saw that. I did see that yesterday. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah. So many people that risked everything. And even now, I mean, the Chico Airport has, you know, 800 over, I think it was over that, animals that are there and the people that are volunteering and UC Davis Medical Center, like their veterinary department came down and, or their veterinary medicine department came down and, you know, they're taking care of animals. Just the amount of good that's going on there should far outweigh what our idiot president says. And it doesn't. And it makes me so sad.
Yeah. Well, what we should pray is for rain the entire next few years.
Right.
Because obviously he can't go out in the rain to do anything.
He's pretty much a gremlin. Before we move on to the
can't get wet.
Before we move on to the next topic, though, I do want to just briefly mention. I don't think the man's ever actually voted because I don't think he knows how it works. Because he seems to think that you can like go in and like, I don't know, put one of those fake mustaches on and some glasses exactly. and re-vote. Like,
that's what's wrong with California.
All okay, those damn illegals.
Go vote and then you change
your shirt. Not even just that. But it touches me. When was the last time you went grocery shopping that he thinks you need an ID to buy cereal?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, just what was that about? Just
not only can you not vote more than once, go out and change your clothes and come back in, you also don't need an ID to buy cereal.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, just the idea though that people they believe him, and I'm like, do you guys know when you enter your polling station and you sign the form? And one person writes it down, and then a second person writes it down, and then they give you your number, and then someone walks you over to your polling place. Like, right. do you really think that you could walk out and come back in and be like, my name's Bob Smith, and they'd
that's
be like, hi, Bob. Like, that's not how it goes down.
And I came back in.
Much less 300, like 3 million people doing this. First of all, no one's got that fucking kind of time. They've already waited in line to vote. Like, it's a whole thing. It's no.
Well, it's hard though. Enough to get people to vote one time.
That's what he thinks. If you live in Massachusetts, you could get on a bus and go to the next state and vote there.
No, you can't.
No.
You have to be registered.
I wonder if he has ever voted. I honestly wonder if he's ever voted.
Or bought cereal because he doesn't understand how either works.
He's really not.
All right. What do we think about female voters? And first of all, white women, you're still sucking. Like, you need to up your game a little bit. The African American and Latino vote cannot carry us forever. Stop being an asshole. Like,
yes.
But
making us look bad.
Female voters are leaving the GOP in droves. And I kind of wanted to hear what you guys thought about that. Is it a fluke? Are they going to stay with the Democrats? Are they going to go back to the GOP? Is it the Kavanaugh effect? Is it that they just hate Trump? Or are they just tired of their shitty, shitty husbands? Go.
the above.
Yeah, I have an opinion on this because, like I said in the last podcast, how
you're kidding.
I know it's crazy. Now, if you're a, like born and bred Republican, you're not leaving your issues because of Trump. So I honestly don't think it's him because I think if you really believe in those values, you're not leaving. I think that there is such an identity crisis in the Republican Party and how the actual like political views of the Republican Party have become so intertwined in religion and all that kind of stuff that I honestly think they just don't align with their values anymore. And so while I don't think they're super, super liberal, I think they are trending a lot more moderate.
Right.
And so then that pushes them a little bit more to the Democrat side. That's at least that's my theory on it. And the friends I have that are females that are Republicans that aren't going anywhere are the ones that are like, don't really even understand what the party represents, but they're a Christian and that's what Christians are. Christians are Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw, I forget, I think it was on Politico. It was an African-American woman wrote an op-ed, and it was called Dear White Women. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was a really good art. Stop there. Yeah.
And it was this woman in the front. She's got her arms up in the air, and she is at the Kemp headquarters. And so she's, you know, she kind of wrote a thing. She's talking about how you go grocery shopping in the same stores, or school, their kids go to the same schools. And it's like, how can you not look around and see what's happening in America today and still vote for somebody like Kemp?
Right.
And then so I'm looking at the article, and it was like, wait a minute. I went to high school with this idiot.
No. Kemp?
Yes. I recognized her.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what happened to you? You were so fun in high school, you become a religious idiot.
It's profitable. It's because it's profitable to be a religious zealot. Like, it is. Yes. They support their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I just, and you hear, because Louisiana is a very red state. And you go around here, and it's like all you hear is like fake news. You know, Trump, how wonderful Trump is. He's a blue collar millionaire. It's like, what the fuck
that's
is that?
That's not a thing. That's not a thing.
He likes the blue collar.
He doesn't. He doesn't know how fucking cereal works.
Exactly. And it's like, I don't understand. You know, we're on like this little island with a few liberal friends that I have. And it's like, you just sit back and you think, because I was laughing with one of the girls that I know, and she said her husband's like, who's going to vote for this fucking idiot? And she's like, everyone we know. Yeah. Exactly. Who's going to vote for this idiot? And sure enough.
I think what it is, so 62% of women actually voted Democrat this time. And I actually think, my personal opinion, and I actually want to get the other Stacey's opinion on this, because she is the most moderate of all of us, I think, is I think what's happened is the Democrats, for the first time in a long time, and I'm not talking about our national elections like Barack Obama or Joe Biden or anything, they ran such an impressive group of people that you couldn't help but pull for them. Like, even the ones who didn't win, Amy McGrath in Kentucky, who was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps and flew combat missions in Iraq. She ran as a Democrat. You know, they ran these incredible women and minorities and people that actually resembled them more than Trump. I think for the first time in a long time, the Democrats made it easier to identify with the group. Stacey Abrams, like, can you be more down to earth than Stacey Abrams?
Right.
Like, I just think they picked better candidates. I really, truly believe. And when women now are looking, they're not just looking at, you know, white men who are representing them. Like, they're looking at women that they would be in book club with, or that they work in an office with, or that they went to high school with. They're looking at these women and saying, wow, I get it. I recognize you. You have the same issues I have. And so now party affiliation doesn't actually matter to me. And I want you to represent me because I think you reflect me. That's what I think actually happened.
And not even just women too, because then you look at Beto O'Rourke and Andrew Gillum and people like that too, who do just reflect the general population a lot more than than Ted Cruz.
Our moderate. Yeah,
I was very disappointed that we didn't have a dead pimp on our side. Yeah. I don't know about y'all, but
shh. Don't. Oh my God, that'd be the scandal of the fucking century if we did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Stace?
I think, you know, some of the things you guys said. I think it's the Kavanaugh thing. I think it's abortion. I think it's the Women's March. That was powerful to see. And I think that a lot of people kind of sat up and said, what's that about? You know, why do we need to pay attention? But I also think it's kind of, you know, when you would, even if you weren't politically involved and you saw Obama on TV and you heard him speak, it's kind of like the way he speaks, it's relaxing. It's, oh, everything's under control. You know, even if you don't agree with his policies, even if you didn't follow along, it's relaxing to know that he was in control. But now with Trump, the things he says are so all over the news and social media and, you know, everywhere you turn, he mm-hmm. said this stupid thing. And I think so many people are sitting up, women especially, and going,
right.
What? No. And they, it's like a feeling yeah. of not being in control. It is. It's like, where are we going with this? You know, like, this is not okay. I need to go do something about it. I need to, you know, have a voice too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it too. I think it's a lot of different things for different mm-hmm. people, but I think it's a little bit of everything.
I think what Trump represents to a lot of women is the very worst encounter they had with a man at some point in their life.
Yes.
And I'm not even saying, you know, I'm not saying every woman has been a victim of sexual assault or sexual violence, but every woman has witnessed at least some type of mm-hmm. Unappreciated advance towards them or comment towards them or whatever. And I think Trump, and because unfortunately the Republican Party has followed suit in saying, well, that worked for him, so we're all going to do it to stay in office. They've all kind of adopted these barbaric behaviors that it's yeah. reminding women of the very worst of men. And not that all men are bad, but it's reminding them right. of all the bad experiences they've had.
The worst one, and yeah.
Even my mother, yeah. who... She's a Democrat, but she's pretty like, she'll vote Republican in her local races if she likes them, and you know, which is good. She, whatever.
But she should pick the best person.
Exactly.
Right.
But she told me this time, she didn't even fucking look them up. She voted Democrat straight down the ticket because there has mm-hmm. to be a check on the system somewhere. Like this yeah. is, she couldn't, yeah. it's gotten out of control in her mind. So she didn't care if the Democrat was terrible. She wanted them in office for a check on the system at some point.
Yeah.
Like that was... It doesn't, at a point, you have to decide, and I think, I can't speak for all women, obviously, otherwise it'd be real fucking rich if I could explain all mm-hmm. women to everyone,
yeah.
but
yeah.
I think it comes to a point where women, by nature, are multitaskers and they're pragmatic. They tend to see a situation and they're going to solve it, and they're going to solve it with everyone's best intentions in mind, and I'm speaking in gross generalizations. So... they see a situation like Trump and the Republican Party and what it's turning into. And even though they may not necessarily, the candidates that were elected may not directly reflect their beliefs, their values now are being put on the chopping block. And for most people, their values are more important than policy. So they're going Right. to vote with someone who more aligns with their values than Right. say, you know, gun control doesn't become as important when you're talking about your 13-year-old possibly being raped at school and no one doing anything about it. Like those are right. the kinds of things when your values aren't reflected, it really becomes an emotional kind of push and pull. And I think women, for the most part, prefer their values to be represented. And who do they trust to represent those values? Other women. Because yeah. no matter how many fucking times you explain to men how something feels, they will never get it. And that's not their fault. They no. shouldn't. They're not built okay. like us. They're not wired like us. We will never understand what a man experiences. That is just the way it is. But men have been in charge for a real long time and they fucked it up. And
exactly.
yeah. I'm not saying exactly. they should never be in charge again, but it's time to just go on a break for a little bit because you guys clearly can't be trusted with this shit. All right. So just yeah. take a seat.
Make up 50% of the population. Why don't we make up 50% of the
exactly
you know, men? Of you've got Congress and you, Senate. You've gotten yeah. too emotional, men. We need you to sit down and let the women yeah. handle it for a little yeah. bit because you're all over the place.
What happened this time around was it's kind of, if you remember way back when Ann Richards ran for governor of the state of Texas. And, you know, going into that election, the Democrats beat the crap out of themselves in that primary.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it came out she was hooked on pills and she was an alcoholic and she went through this bad divorce. And then, but I mean, she came out really bloody. So by the time the election, when the Republicans only put up one guy, and so it was, she had like 30% to his 70%. So there was no way in hell she was going to win. So this guy refused to debate her. He refused to meet with her at any time. So he would do these little cream puff things because he had 70%, you know, he was in the polls. He had 70% of the vote. And he was a rancher, some kind of big oil field guy, but he was a rancher. And it was, they were going out to brand cows, the calves. And he said, and there was a storm rolling in. He has all this media there. He comes out on this horse. And he said, the weather is like rape. When it's inevitable,
oh,
you should
no.
lay back and enjoy it. And it was like,
What?
Wow. Exactly. What did he just say? So they reported. I mean, they had it on camera. Wow. It was like he couldn't deny he didn't say it.
Oh my God.
One of the reasons that the GOP in Texas is so so prevalent and they win so many elections is because of the women GOP. And they pick up phones and they raise money and they have all these teas and everything. And they said when that came out, the phones in Texas went silent. And the election night, Ann Richards became governor of Texas.
Wow.
And it was like, so I think it's kind of the same analogy this time. And it's like you could say something and you're joking and you think it's the good old boy system and it's funny, but it's not. Yeah, and I think that women are starting to finally, hopefully, wake up a little bit, kind of like they did in Texas.
Hello, men. Women are the very best at giving the silent treatment. So just because you don't hear them bitching doesn't mean they're not pissed. They're just like, okay. I see you, motherfucker. I see you. And I'm voting for cute-ass Beto O'Rourke now.
I really thought he was going to pull that one out. I really did.
You know what? He came real close. And in Texas, he came.
That's amazing.
Ted Cruz is just such a doorknob, though. He's terrible.
He's so creepy.
Yeah, he's real. We're going to move on to our good news of the week, though, because it's always such bad news. But a Swiss businessman he contributed $1 billion towards protecting 30% of the planet. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for using, okay, I'm going to call you Batman, because thank you for using your extraordinary wealth to actually do something that will have long-lasting effects for generations to come. You didn't build a library at your alma mater. You didn't, have a hospital erected in your name, which are all whatever, good for you.
Yeah.
But you protected 30% of the world's surface, and that my son thanks you. He doesn't know that he does yet, but he does. His kids thank you. And he'd already spent $415 million on preserving about 40 million acres around the world. And I just wish we had more, even on a small scale, more people willing to do things like this, because this is truly going to be...
it makes a difference.
30% of the world? Like, Jesus. Difference.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So much money.
So thank you. Awesome. And if I could pronounce your name, I would say it, but it's Swiss. And it's like Hans Jorg Weiss. And I know I butchered that. But yeah, but. And you know what? He's like 85 years old. He's not going to see, he could have passed that wealth on to other people. Mm-hmm. He could have kept it in his family. He's not going to see the benefits of his good doing, but he did it anyway, and that is what makes me feel like the world still has a chance, because there are men and women like him. So thank you, Mr. Weiss. I won't say your first name again because I don't fucking know. All right, what's everyone obsessed with this week? I'm gonna start because mine's real quick. Stanley died. I'm heartbroken. He's 95. I'm not that heartbroken. Like, I get it, he had a good run, like, whatever. But I love comic books. Everyone who knows me knows that. He was such a creative genius, and the world will not actually be the same without him in it. And that makes me really sad. But you know what? He will live on forever as long as Captain America's around and, Spider-Man's around. And he's phenomenal. So thank you, Stan Lee, and we will all miss you terribly. Yeah. Stacey?
Yes. I kind of piggybacking off what Stacey said about, seeing a little bit of good in the fires is just that, like I talked about last week and Mr. Rogers saying, look for the helpers. It's that the stories that have come out, about people helping each other, what we see on the news and social media, all the things, all the donations, all the people taking in animals, and it's amazing to see the help that the entire state seems to have given. Like, I just read one before we got on the podcast, this skating rink in a neighboring town is opening to all the kids. that are displaced. You come in and you show your address and you get free skate rental and you can just forget about your problems for the afternoon. So just the amount of love and support that's like flowing in is just really cool to see. So that's what I'm obsessed with this week.
Stacey?
Yeah. I had a really crappy last 2 days. I really did. I didn't realize that like I've had super like a really bad headache right behind my eyes and like bloodshot eyes and stuff. And it didn't dawn on me today until today that it was because of the smoke. Cause it's really bad. It's no joke. It looks like it's foggy here because there's, it's so bad. Here we are characterized in the unhealthy. I'm sorry. Very unhealthy.
Are you wearing a mask every day?
I am not. I don't go outside.
You probably should. You're susceptible to literally fucking everything. If something bad can happen, it will happen to you. Yeah.
Right. So I had that lovely combination of like, this has been going on for several days and I just feel like shit. And then I had to get a cortisone shot in my foot yesterday that I wasn't expecting. So now I'm back in a stupid boot for 2 more weeks. And it's just, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have a pity party for myself. And then instead of doing that, I made the mistake and or maybe the right decision of going on Facebook and looking at these like missing and found animal posts from the fire. I don't know why I did it. But then instead of like it was all really, really sad at first. But then when I noticed like the amount of work that these people are putting in, not just like the actual volunteers in the shelters and stuff, but there's people that are putting these Facebook groups together. They're scouring through every single post, getting all the like really important details, giving them an ID number, trying to go back on other posts and correct things when they think somebody's been found and or updating when unfortunately if they have found animals that have passed away and stuff. The amount of work that goes into that kind of stuff, and you know, you see some comments on there about people, and some people are being jerks and some people just really don't understand how you could leave your animal in a house, and they don't understand that these people left for work in the morning and then the fire started and they never got to come back home and their animals were inside and, you know, they couldn't get out. But just seeing these stories and of these people that, I mean, one of them, there was a picture of a husky, and if it weren't for, I can't remember if it was his tag or if it was a microchip, I don't think these people would have recognized their dog because so much of his fur had been burnt off. He wasn't bald, but he looked like a short haired dog as opposed to a husky. Colors were completely different because they'd been singed or covered with ash and so many things. When I saw the before picture and the after picture, I don't know that I would have recognized my own animal in that state. White dogs look brown or black or orange. Cats look orange when they were white. I mean, there's just, it's intense. It's really crazy. And so, so looking at that kind of puts things in perspective. And so I have a lot, like I said, I do have family members and friends and stuff that were evacuated that, I mean, one family member, they still don't know if their house is going to be safe or not. So to see so many people banding together, I know I'm going over, but I'm going to give a little shout out too. We have a food truck in our town called Sip and Scoop California, which is like, they do Italian ice and hot chocolate and hot drinks and teas and, you know, coffee drinks and stuff like that. And for the second time in a row, almost a year apart, from the Santa Rosa fires, she has gone up, with her trucks and stuff fully loaded with donations and fully stocked with hot beverages and stuff and driven up there and given donations and given out free drinks and stuff to first responders and evacuees and that sort of stuff. So it's people like that that are doing things that really make you, you know, really put things in perspective.
That's great.
Yeah.
What about you, Allie? What are you obsessed with this week?
The Saints. 8-1, man.
What's that like?
I mean, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, I never thought I'd live to see the Saints go to the Super Bowl, so I might get to live to again. See twice. Yeah, again. Exactly. Yeah. So everyone in the state like right now is obsessed with the Saints.
Let me tell you, Drew Brees is a national treasure.
Yeah. Like he really is.
I mean, as soon as the Niners are out, I'm always pulling for the Saints. Like I love the Saints.
Which was a while ago. We canceled football in week 3.
We canceled football 2 years ago. Yeah,
football's over. We do basketball now.
It's like it's been I mean, you know, we watch the fires and watch the news and all, but every once in a while, you just need a happy story.
Yeah. So. Ours doesn't come from football.
No, the Saints were actually out giving turkeys away today, so they were preparing for the game, and So, but everybody's got Saints fever in Louisiana.
You should.
They're a team I can root for. They're a team I can get behind when my, like you said, when our team's out.
I mean, Ellen has a dedicated seat in her studio audience to Drew Brees and his wife. So, I mean, if the queen says,
whatever Ellen does.
How is everyone's wine? I assume good because everyone is smiling and laughing and
I want to hear about this Hello Kitty wine. Oh, like,
I want to hear about the Bud Light.
I'm going to say Hello Kitty Pinot Grigio. I don't love Pinot Grigio, but was it worse than any other Pinot Grigio I've ever had?
Is that an endorsement? Like, I don't understand what's happening.
I really like it.
You liked it?
I think so.
I'm going to edit this out.
It had a cute little Hello Kitty label.
And there it is. There it is.
And it tastes like wine.
As opposed,
which is shocking.
What did you think it was going to be? Hello Kitty piss? Like,
I thought it was going to taste like that garbage sweet wine that we had in Pennsylvania. Like, it'd be. Blueberry strawberry flavored or something.
No, the wine
like
here is
that,
garbage. Yeah,
it tastes like a Capri Sun. It just tastes like wine, which I think for Hello Kitty is quite the endorsement.
I guess
I'm gonna have to look for that. I have never seen Hello Kitty
either.
Yeah, Stacey's the only person that's bought it, which is why it's in the bargain bin.
Right,
she got it for $1.99. Like,
I wish.
Stace, how's your wine?
It's good. Yeah. It's still, I didn't even, I drink, okay, maybe half. So it's real heavy, you know, that's not like me.
No, leave that you're normally a bottle in, yeah.
But it's not that it's bad. It's just, for some reason, it's just very heavy.
Mine's fantastic. I would buy it, like, I would actually buy it and drink it again, not just for the podcast. It was really good. How's the Bud Light, Allie?
It's very good.
Does it have any hints of nutmeg and vanilla in it? Or?
No, I went to California once, and we went to wine country. And I forgot where we were. And they said, you could try any kind of wine you wanted. And I said, well, I would like to try this $120 bottle. So the guy poured me some, and I drank. Because I said, you know, what's the difference? Can it be that much better? And yes, it is. Yeah. And he was like, he brought that oot out, and he was like, you can spit it out. And he was like, that's all right.
No, I'm not fucking spitting it out. Are you kidding me? I'm about to snort it. Yeah, what do you mean?
I know. That's how it was wine tasting with Poe. She's such a wine snob that she wouldn't feel finished glasses and stuff. Me and Jackie are grabbing them from her.
I'm like, don't put that out. Give it to us. We'll drink it. What's wrong with you? Yeah. As a matter of fact, give me that spit bucket. I'm not above it.
I'll try some more of this $120.
Even if it's terrible, I'm drinking the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Allie, let people know when Answering the Call is coming out, where they can buy it first, and where they can reach you if they want to send you more. They actually sent in really good questions. It was impressive.
No, they really did. Yeah. It's really good. It comes out December 1st on the Bullstrokes site, which is bullstrokesbooks.com. And then after that, on the 15th of December, it'll be available everywhere. You know, Barnes Noble, Amazon, however you want to buy it. And then it shouldn't be too much after the book comes out. The audio will also be out. And if you listen to Calling the Dead, just came out in audio not that long ago. And boy, she did an awesome job on that. I really did. Because every once in a while, when people try to do Southern accents, like, oh.
Yeah, because Beneath the Waves was not.
I do declare. You're like, I can do it.
Exactly.
Well, sometimes you try to do an accent, you're like, at a certain point, just fucking don't. Because you're doing it like, just talk normal. You're doing them a disservice. Like,
yeah it's bad. So it's like, you know, we don't talk like Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara.
What?
What?
Really?
That's bullshit.
But no, she did an awesome job. So that one will be out December 1st. So if hopefully, and then if it's TERRALI20 at yahoo.com if they want to drop me a line, or they can go to my Facebook page and tell me if it sucks or if it's good.
Don't tell her if it sucks. No one wants to hear that. Well, Allie, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on. And oh, Stacey, did you want to announce the winner of the pin?
Oh, it's Jeremy.
Okay, Jeremy's not getting it. Go to the next one.
I did the random, I'll post the thing. It's a random website where you put in all the names and it just picks one, and it was Jeremy. So
you should have flicked it again. Give it to one of our actual listeners. We're gonna hash this out.
Someone we don't know.
I thought just because we only got like 4 actual entries for that, I can send them to everybody. So it's fine.
Okay. Congratulations, Jeremy. Okay. Until next week, everybody. Actually, I don't know if we're recording next week because it's Thanksgiving. We'll surprise you if we're in your feed. So if not, happy the day that we celebrate that we rape and pillage people. You know, yay. I have thoughts on that, but I'm not getting into that because.
Yeah, or the day where we show up in a country and decide who we discovered
in a caravan and decide that the people
here. We're going to call you Indians. This is India.
Yeah, Stacey and I will literally suck the fun out of every fucking holiday and you can imagine. And then we're going to
name the country after the guy who drew the map.
And we're just gonna kick you all out until you don't we block, but not until we rape and pillage all your women and children.
Hi, thank you, Christian.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Thanks, ladies. It was really fun. I appreciate y'all.